Hey, hey, everyone. Welcome back for another episode of Live Like an Athlete. Thanks for joining us again. I'm your host, Erin Sharoni. I am solo today without my buddy Big Hurt, I'm sorry to say, but I promise we'll have lots of fun. I've got a fantastic guest lined up for you guys whom I guarantee, by the way, you never would have expected. And in fact, you likely didn't even know that the place he works even existed. It's really the stuff of Hollywood science fiction blockbusters. So now that I have your rapt attention, let's get our disclaimer out of the way. I want to remind everyone listening that in no way should this be considered as medical advice, a substitute for a professional opinion, etc. This is for your personal entertainment and edification only. Please advise a physician before beginning any exercise program or making any changes to your diet. All right, so our episode today follows our episode from the other week where we interviewed the amazing men of the U.S. Air Force Special Forces Team Guardian Angel, the combat rescue officers and pararescue men. So if you enjoyed that, you're really going to enjoy this. We talked about how those men are considered to be literally part of a human-based weapons system, which is an interesting concept. So that said, you might be curious about who develops not only the weapons, but the technology that's used to literally transform these elite warriors into high-tech fighters, more or less. And of course, this all ties back to athletics, as this technology can ultimately be used in the civilian space, specifically with pro athletes, and then even people like you and I listening. So our special guest today is Dr. Josh Hagen. He's the lead researcher at the U.S. Air Force Research Lab at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base with the 711th Human Performance Wing. That's a mouthful. But that's right, the Air Force Research Lab. So if you've never heard of that, well, neither had I. And they're doing some pretty unreal stuff over there. I mean, if you guys just think about it for a second, all the technology that's needed to remain on the leading edge as a military unit, this is really the stuff that movies are made of, and plenty of stuff we don't yet know. But lots of stuff that Dr. Hagen's actually going to be able to talk about. So first things first, here's a little bit about the Air Force Research Lab from their website. I'm just going to read that. The Air Force Research Lab is the Air Force's only organization wholly dedicated to leading the discovery, development, and integration of warfighting technologies for our country's air, space, and cyberspace forces. They trace their roots to the vision of air power pioneers who understood that science is a key to air supremacy. The passion and commitment of the Air Force Research Lab people to realize this vision has helped to create the world's best aerospace and cyberspace force. So, that's pretty cool. And the wheels in your mind are probably turning. So you might be wondering, how did I come across these folks and what on earth is the Human Performance Wing? Well, I'm glad you asked, even if you didn't. My friends over at the New York City Air Force office actually posted this really amazing photo on Instagram a few weeks back, and I saw it, and it was essentially a photo of a Band-Aid on an arm. So you think, whatever, but it was the caption that got me. So it's not just any Band-Aid. It is a biosensor Band-Aid that is in development by the research lab, which ultimately will use sweat instead of blood to remotely track body performance on a physical and cognitive level. Now, I thought this is like something that they do in Star Trek. This is absolutely unreal. Certainly not unbelievable because, you know, with nanotechnology and all the biotech space, there's a lot of really interesting things being invented. But the fact that this was actually in production and there's actually a prototype of this thing that they'd taken a picture of, and that, I mean, God, the possibilities were just endless. And so I contacted them, and I said, first of all, what is this thing? Is it real? And they said, yes. And I said, second of all, who's developing this? And they said, well, that's our Air Force Research Lab. And I said, the what? There's an Air Force Research Lab? Which obviously I should have thought that there would be, because who's developing all this cool stuff that they use? But the prospect of talking to them just really excited me. And so we're really, really lucky to have a lead researcher on, Dr. Josh Hagen. As I mentioned, he's with the 711th Human Performance Wing. And so with that, it is my honor and my pleasure to welcome Dr. Josh Hagen onto the show. Dr. Hagen, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Oh, sure thing. Thanks for having me. Really excited about this.
Absolutely. Me too. As I said to you before we started taping, it's satisfying every nerdy part of my being. So I'm super excited for this.
Well, good. Hopefully we have some stuff that'll be fun to hear about.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm sure. I can't wait to get into it. But before we do, since I didn't give the folks listening any background on you specifically, if you could just maybe tell us a little bit about yourself and what your role is there at the Human Performance Wing.
Yeah, sure. I'm an engineer. I went to school for chemical engineering and then graduate school for materials engineering. But I did all my graduate research here at Air Force Research Lab. So we do all of the, you know, we're the research arm of the Air Force. And so I went to school in University of Cincinnati and we're at Wright-Patt just up in Dayton. So I've always loved everything military, everything science. So it was really a kind of a perfect opportunity when I found out there was a potential to do, you know, graduate research at an Air Force lab. That was all about it. So came up here, did all my research, and I was lucky enough to start doing some work in the Human Performance Wing here. And that's just been a blast. Just so many cool opportunities. And it's really a fun time right now. And the wing does a whole bunch of really cool stuff. But specifically what I've been focusing on the last couple of years is like physiological monitoring and ways to actually measure human performance and try to create tools for our men and women that can basically, you know, allow them to track how they're doing, but give them tools to work more efficiently, to work out more efficiently, be healthier, you know, track their performance, just all sorts of fun stuff like that. And what's been really fun about it too is trying to, you know, there's dual use, you know, not just the military, but also athletics. And yep. I'm a big sports buff myself. So it's fun to see, you know, possibilities to actually get this into collegiate sports and professional sports. And so I've just been having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, and that's really what struck me. And in fact, as I think I pointed out before you came on to our listeners, what ultimately connected me to you guys and why it's so perfect for this podcast, talking about living like an athlete and professional sports, obviously health, wellness, technology, it's all related. And what was really interesting is the other week, we spoke to a bunch of the combat rescue officers, part of the Guardian Angels for the Air Force, and they talked about how they're considered human-based weapons system. And they explained that to me and my co-host, and our jaws were sort of on the floor, because you think of a fighter jet as a weapon system, not necessarily a human as a weapon system. But in effect, you know, they're tasked with a lot of responsibility, and technology goes hand in hand with that. And so what I thought was interesting about what you're doing is that you're actually enhancing the performance of the human being, so that in essence they can be part of that system, whether it's for fighting or for rescuing people in need. And so that's what I thought was so great. But you briefly mentioned it, so let's talk about the technology that brought us together today. So the skin biosensors that I posted this photo of on my Instagram through the Air Force New York City office, I read an interview in which you said, and I'm going to quote you, "Our vision is that every airman at the beginning of their week will be able to put on an electronic Band-Aid that will quantify everything about them. It would measure the typical things a doctor would measure in a checkup." And I love that this thing is non-invasive, because as a nerd myself, I'm obsessed with measuring my own blood for data. So I actually do that every single day. But this bypasses the pain and inconvenience. So maybe just talk about the genesis of that new device.
Yeah, no, that's a great point that you bring up. And that's kind of what we were trying to do, is look at completely non-invasive ways to do performance monitoring. And we do quite a bit of work on some of the more commercial kind of things where you can do heart rate and respiration rate and accelerometry and things like that. That is great. And we have really nice use cases for that. And we're working on products in that realm. But I think what's really key about what Air Force Research Labs is doing, you know, it's between myself at the Human Performance Wing and then our materials director kind of putting these things together, is, you know, one of our jobs is to create technologies that guys like our Guardian Angel guys can use today. And we do that. But then we're also responsible to figure out, you know, what do we need to develop in the next 10, 20, 30 years? And you start thinking 30 years out, start thinking Star Trek kind of stuff of, I mean, what is the realm of the possible? Let's get creative. Let's get a little crazy about what we want to do. So we had initially thought, okay, you know, we like this idea of a Band-Aid, because like I said, you put it on the beginning of the week, just like a normal Band-Aid, you put it on and you forget that it's on. It's just part of your life. And so we want these products to be part of your life. not a burden that you have on. It's just part of what you do. And, you know, we had initially thought, okay, well, you know, how come there's all this stuff in blood that we can measure that gives us really great data. You know, heart rate is great, respiration is great, but it doesn't give you that true data. I mean, there's things in your blood that can measure very specifically how stressed you are, or how fatigued you are. You know, lactate is an awesome marker for figuring out, you know, just performance levels and are you just physically drained. We do all sorts of studies here to figure out if you're your level of cognitive draining. So we all know, like, so if you work out really hard, you feel foggy, or if you stare at your computer screen all day, you feel foggy.
Sure.
So we're actually trying to measure the foggy. And if we could do that non-invasively, that's what we're looking at. So initially we thought, okay, blood, that's great. We can measure this stuff. But you don't want to prick your finger, you know, 50 times a day to get that blood out. And so we really got turned on to the idea of sweat. And originally there was very little research out there to show us, you know, this stuff is available in sweat, but we're finding that it really is. So these things that we find in blood that we measure that are really great metrics of stress and things like that is also in sweat. So it's pretty interesting. So we got tied to some key researchers that are now out of University of Arizona, you know, looking at what's in sweat and all these different things. And then we were reading a bunch of papers. So we found a paper from 1954 that had a theory that anything water soluble in blood is present in sweat at equivalent concentrations. And so we're finding that that's actually largely true. So that's really just opened up this whole new area of research for us. So completely non-invasive biomarker sensing. So like you measure things every day, but you have to draw your blood. What if we can do that with sweat? And that's really what we're trying to do. And so, I mean, I think the applications are just endless for this. And so, you know, initially we're looking at, you know, the highly active, just like the guys you interviewed last week, the special ops guys that, you know, they're the best of the best. And if we can track things in their sweat, to give them performance indications, hydration indications, all these types of things to make them safer and make them better, that's what we're trying to do first and foremost. So yeah, it's just a really exciting time. And this is, I mean, that's exactly what we're developing today in the lab.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And what struck me as, and by the way, you mentioned not wanting to prick your finger 40 times a day, which is what I do. And the tips of my fingers look like, you know, like somebody chewed them off or something. like purple bruises. It's terrible. But my spreadsheets are really interesting. So I guess that's
what. So what are you measuring?
I'm measuring ketones. I'm measuring glucose. I have a friend who's a bit of a biohacker that's trying to help me measure some other things as well that aren't as easily measured through a diabetes monitor. So it's just fascinating. And then of course, you know, like all the different profiles you can get when you actually draw your blood. So yeah.
So you're a quantified selfer?
What's that?
You're a quantified selfer?
Apparently.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's just, to me, it's, and in fact, we had someone on a previous podcast, Ronnie Sellum, he's the CEO of a company called Inside Tracker, which you may have heard of. They're based out of Cambridge, Massachusetts, and some really smart folks on their board there. But their whole thing is tracking blood. Obviously, it started with athletes, but now it's available to the public. And we had him on talking exactly about the things you're talking about. Obviously, different application for civilian use, but the fact that there's so much history with blood biomarker measurement, whereas there's not so much with something, for instance, like genetics, which is a question I have for you later. But what struck me with this as related to civilians is the use that it could have in daily life for non-soldiers. Like, for instance, if you have a diabetic kid, you can monitor that kid maybe from your iPhone app if he's wearing the Band-Aid, or an elderly person. And then, of course, in pro sports, this technology is sort of already in use. I know they have biosensors on the jerseys, some of the teams, and that's, I don't know how effective that is, but this seems above and beyond. So are you creating this kind of stuff with the hope that eventually it does trickle down to benefit the public?
Oh yeah. So that's a huge part of what I do, just as part of my job. So, you know, long gone are the days where, you know, if we were just making this for military only, the cost of these, you know, these Band-Aids would be astronomical. So I am very always looking at what the commercial civilian side is, because at the end of the day, if these patches can be made to measure these things and it's a commercial success to where anybody can go in any store and buy a pack of 10 of them, then ultimately that's way cheaper for the military to buy them in the end. So, you know, we have to be fiscally responsible about, you know, what's the cheapest way to get this technology to our men and women. And so that's why, you know, really fun part of my job is getting to reach out to the civilian counterparts like college athletics and pro athletics to try to say, hey, you know, these are the kind of things that we're thinking about doing. This is the data behind it. This is what the device looks like. This is what it does. What do you guys think? You know, help us kind of design this thing to where you would actually want to buy it at the end of the day. Because at the end of the day, we want to buy it for our military guys. So we need that to be a real product. So that's what I try to do. And that's a real fun part of the job.
Yeah. It's amazing. It really is. Like you said, like Star Trek. And as a self-proclaimed Trekkie, I got very excited when I saw this because I thought, oh my God, this is just like something Captain Picard might wear. But why don't you tell us what kind of challenges you faced along the way with it in development, just because I'm sure as in any scientific process, there are challenges and you test things and they work or they don't work. And so I imagine it's been an interesting process.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And so I'd say the number one challenge that we're working on getting over now is understanding that blood to sweat correlation. So, you know, you mentioned glucose. Okay. I mean, that's a huge, huge potential there, especially for diabetes care. And there's been plenty of companies that have looked at that. Can you do that in sweat? And there's challenges to that. But it's kind of that concept of, okay, you know, that's the gold standard. You measure it in blood. Now, can we do the same thing in sweat? So understanding what that concentration similarity is, if there is one. So if glucose goes up in blood, does it go up in sweat at the same time range, or is there a lag? You know, the sweat gland actually, you know, for some of these markers, the sweat gland actually produces some of these things. So that skews your results. So it's really trying to just get into, you know, skin physiology and sweat gland physiology. And I'm an engineer, so, you know, trying to reach out to real doctors and dermatologists and all these other different fields. You know, we've reached out to guys that actually make deodorant to try to figure out, because they know everything about sweat. So what can we learn from them to kind of figure out what we're doing? And so we're really trying to get to those correlations of, okay, this is a real thing that we can measure in sweat. And then the other side of that is now designing the, you know, so there's a, you know, sensors embedded in these Band-Aid patches that measure what we're trying to measure. So it's, okay, if we identify something now, how do we measure that? Because, you know, typically with blood, you know, as you know, you take a sample and you put it into some handheld gadget, or more typically you're at a hospital and they take a big old vial of blood and then send it to some lab somewhere. And then hours or days later, you get the answer. So we're trying to eliminate that entire chain and do it on a patch. So there's a lot of engineering challenges that go into that. Lots of things, but I think we're getting there. And the other thing that we're going to have to, you know, kind of cross when we get there, and you alluded this a little bit earlier with, you know, testing of kids, and we think that's a huge, like the medical space of this, we think it's huge. So if you could be an alternative to a blood draw, I mean, that'd be pretty tremendous, and especially with kids. And so, you know, we work with some pediatric hospitals where, you know, there's some really exciting young investigators there that would actually go out on a limb and say, hey, let's see if we can do a study on sweat instead of blood. So we're doing that on a number of cases for like pneumonia biomarkers and some other things like that. So really trying to get the medical industry to say, hey, I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to see if this thing might work, because they've been doing blood for, you know, hundreds of years. So it's trying to change that paradigm. That's going to be, you know, I think we'll get there. It's just going to take some time.
Well, changing any paradigm takes some time. Just ask Copernicus, you know, yeah. Or any of those guys,
yeah.
Who may or may not have been burned at the stake. But kidding aside, though, that is actually the blood to sweat correlation is something that also a question that I had immediately when I saw it, because I know just from measuring, for instance, my ketones, if you're trying to maintain nutritional ketosis, which we've talked about on the show quite a bit, you have the urine sticks, the keto sticks, which you can basically pee on, and it shows you a range of colors. And then you have the more expensive blood ketone monitors, and you know, the urine sticks actually will reflect what your ketone levels were 2 to 3 hours prior, whereas allegedly the blood will reflect it immediately. And so if you're in combat, I would presume that you would need to read biomarkers in real time, more or less, rather than, hey, this dude was dehydrated 3 hours ago. So that's interesting to me.
Yeah, so it's really trying to understand that trending data. And, you know, some of these things, I expect there to be a lag. I don't think it's, you know, as severe as the 2 to 3 hours, but if you at least understand how things are trending, so if your electrolyte balance is trending in the wrong direction and you can cause some, you know, give some feedback and say, hey, you need to hydrate, or maybe even you need to hydrate with a specific, you know, electrolyte mixture, or you need a certain nutritional balance. I mean, one of the things that I I'm really excited about is the potential of actually being able to give you your own fuel gauge. I mean, this is essentially what we could do by measuring. And that's kind of what you're doing with, you know, measuring your ketones and things like that is, you know what your goal is and how you want to get there. And your fuel is what you eat.
Right.
If you could actually measure your fuel gauge, your fuel consumption level, you know, how much you're burning at a real level, biochemical level, then that can actually guide your nutritional, you know, what you should be eating, you know, very specifically what you should be drinking to get you to that key performance.
Yeah, this blows the various fuel bands out of the water.
Oh, yeah.
I'll just say that much.
Yeah, we test all those too. And so, I mean, they're good at some things, you know, if you need to be motivated to walk a little bit more. But, right. You know, certainly you've talked to our special ops guys. That's not the crew that we're working with.
No, it is, most certainly is not. They informed us that they work out 12 hours a day. So something like that.
Yeah.
They ice climb for fun and ride wild buffaloes or something.
Uh-huh.
But so here's a kind of far out question. I don't know, actually, maybe it's not that far out, but my creative part of my brain started working when I saw this and I said, well, wouldn't it be interesting, because I'm kind of obsessed with various biofeedback technologies, if instead of taking info out, extracting info from the sweat, which is ostensibly what you're doing, could you also reverse feed the info? So could you, you know, let's say in the future, is there some potential to get this information and then say, well, this person requires XYZ because we're showing this trend that they're deficient. And then somehow through some sort of electrical impedance, put this, I don't know, whether it's through vibration or whether it's like a biofeedback mechanism, put something back into them. Because there are some rather experimental machines that do similar things, whether it's measuring a frequency and then feeding that frequency back in through eSTM or, you know, like neurofeedback devices and stuff like that. Is that something that you've even remotely explored, or is that just like Star Wars technology that...
No, you definitely need to be working here because we're thinking the same things. Yeah, we've had that same thought. So we have this concept of human performance augmentation. So the tools that we're developing are, you know, sensing these things about the body and then assessing, like understanding what those numbers mean. So if I give you a level of something, you don't necessarily care what that level is. You just want to know what it means. And then once you know what it means, what are you going to do about it?
Right.
So that's kind of the augment phase of, okay, drink this electrolyte mixture is one part, but yeah, you're exactly right. So, you know, there are transdermal patches and other things where you can actually, you know, inject things back into the body pharmaceutically. So whatever that augment strategy is, you could absolutely do that with the same patch. And so, you know, iontophoresis is one way to actually deliver, you know, certain pharmaceuticals directly through the skin. There's actually some patches that like some physical therapists will give that can dose in anti-inflammatories. So you wear this big patch on your knee and it doses it in specifically to your knee just by the same iontophoresis method. So yeah, we're thinking along the same lines for sure.
Oh, cool. Well, great minds think alike then.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking even more far reaching, being like, you know, sort of in the vein of homeopathy, whether or not you agree with the science of that. But the idea that everything has an electric signature, basically, which has been proven. And so could you use that sort of technology to you know, feed certain frequencies back into the body, even forgetting transdermal pharmaceuticals? But if you had some guy in a remote location, you know, he may not have a patch with certain chemicals on it, or it may not be available, the specific thing he needs. So remotely,
yeah.
Perhaps you could send some sort of frequency and who knows, maybe that would affect something, even if it's just cognitive performance. So that's,
yeah. So there's actually some really cool stuff going on here in the wing called transcranial direct current stimulation.
Yep. I love that stuff.
Oh, you know, okay, great. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of research going on here on that, where, you know, increasing cognitive performance, reducing fatigue, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we're definitely deep into that too.
Yeah, I love that. I just talked to a neurologist who we had on our show who uses that technology. It's using micro Tesla currents, right?
Yeah, that's one way to do it magnetically, or you can just do actual electrical low current stimulation too.
Right. Oh, awesome! I'm very excited. Okay, so since we've gotten that out of the way, what other sorts of projects are you guys working on over there that you're able to disclose?
Yeah. So the sweat path is certainly, you know, very big in what we're doing, but it's also looking at, you know, the more near-term stuff and the vital signs kind of monitors, you know, what can we do today? So we try to take a look at, okay, like physiological monitoring in general, how can we do it? And what are all the things that we can measure non-invasively on the body? And then once we figure out all those different things, trying to pare it down to different mission spaces or commercial spaces of, okay, you know, over here, you don't need to measure all this stuff. Over here, you need to measure some of this stuff. So it's trying to understand that, tying it to Air Force mission, but then also civilian mission spaces. And a lot of that is really trying to understand some of the commercial technologies, some of the, you know, you mentioned some of the wearables that are out there. You know, some they're good at doing some things and not good at others. So how can we get those products to be better, or can we merge multiple products together to give us better information? And my motivation is just trying to get, you know, especially to those combat controllers or any of our special ops guys, how can I get products to them, like, you know, in less than a year, something that they can start using today? I mean, the sweat stuff I'm real fired up about, and we're going to get there, but that's like a multi-year kind of thing. I want to get them something today. So really, you know, diving into the exercise physiology and sports performance and cognitive performance in sports and all that stuff, that ties in athletics and our special ops guys. So I'm really trying to put real products together to say, you know, in 6 months, hey, we got this thing that can actually predict your cognitive performance based on your physical fatigue. Here, try it out, see what you think. Let's see if we can get it to a bunch of guys and make you better. And I guess the other side of all of that is the medical component, of specifically a vital sign. So, you know, we work with the same guardian angel guys that you talk to, trying to create tools for them to help them do their medical mission, give them more information during their medical mission. So, you know, they work in remote locations. They might jump out of planes to go save somebody's life. So we want to arm them with medical diagnostic tools that they can have in their pocket, jump out of a plane and go, you know, slap a Band-Aid on a patient and be able to get all their vital signs to help them triage patients and things like that. So we've got all that other stuff going on as well. So, you know, just really endless opportunities, I think.
That's right. And they did tell us how, you know, not only do they have to be these highly skilled combat warriors, but they also have to, like, perform surgery, you know, on the top of a mountain for somebody who may not speak the same language. And it just really, I was so impressed by that. I think one of the guys said, well, yeah, you've got to, you know, pass your EMT training, of course, but if you told a doctor or a nurse the kinds of things we actually are doing in the field, they would look at you like you're crazy, because they'd say that's not possible. You know, you need an operating room or a triage center or something like that. So
yeah, those guys are unbelievable. And that's what gets me fired up about working every day is I get to try to help enable technologies for that mission specifically. And how can I allow them to do the medical mission better? How can I give them tools so they can perform at a higher physical level than they already are now, if that's even possible. So that's what fires me up.
Yeah, absolutely. It fires me up, and I don't even work there. So we have some listener questions from Twitter and Facebook. I'm going to ask this one from Facebook. Edgar asks, what things do you guys not have the technology for yet, but would you like to eventually develop? So I guess he's talking like Star Trek type futuristic stuff.
That's a good question. I mean, I think the ultimate is the, you know, if you can develop a tricorder that you can scan over in a body and do just complete diagnostics. I mean, that's the holy grail, but that's getting a little crazy with it. You know, I think it's, you know, basically trying to take the same things you're doing with measuring all these blood diagnostics and trying to, you know, you've got these big labs at hospitals that have hugely expensive equipment to measure these things. So it's trying to do all of that in real time. That's a real enabling thing. And you know, some of that we're working on, but a lot of that's just really hard stuff to do. And there's all this, you know, the nanotechnology and biotechnology field is allowing a lot of these things to happen that haven't been possible before. So it's exploring what's the realm of the possible in the biotech and nanotech field, and how can we do things that we never thought we could do them even 10 years ago.
So basically, like what Dr. Crusher uses on Star Trek Next Generation, where she just scans a body with something that looks like an iPhone, and they know immediately what's wrong.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the ultimate, for sure.
The Holy Grail, indeed. I mentioned it briefly before, but we've had a number of folks on the show in the past talking about genetics, epigenetics, that sort of stuff. Are you developing or studying anything with respect to genetics? Because for me personally, and I've done, you know, the 23andMe thing, and I have all my alleles and all that, and I'm feeding it through algorithms all the time to just try and see what's going on. But we know so little, and the doctors we've had on have pointed that out. While we think we know how things affect our genes on even an epigenetic level, we don't really know, because unlike blood biomarkers, we haven't studied it for hundreds of years. So I feel like it's an uncharted territory. It's sort of a new frontier, but that there's a lot of potential. So is it still too unknown, or is that something that you guys also address?
It's becoming much more known. I'm not as familiar with that, but I know that, you know, definitely that research is going on in the Air Force and all over the place. But this idea of personalized medicine, you know, being able to actually have drugs tuned to you specifically and get you healed up faster, that's a huge opportunity space. And we're seeing some of that. This isn't genetic, but, you know, on the biomarker side, we're seeing everybody's got very different biochemistries, and the way you react to things is very specific to you, and trying to understand what that signature is for you. So I don't necessarily care what your signature is versus the guy next to you. I care what it is to you and what that means. And I think the same thing is kind of true on the genetic side, is you can really personalize all these things. I think the opportunity space is huge. And, you know, just with the, you know, I think what's enabling it is the cost of gene sequencing and doing all this stuff is drastically coming down. So now people can do these studies. And so you can actually get this in the research lane and understand the data and get a lot of people looking at it. So yeah, I think that's going to just explode over the next few years.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because, and I mentioned this in one of our very early episodes, but probably about, God, now it was 12, 13 years ago, I took a bioethics course at Princeton, and we had this incredible professor. And he asked everyone in the room to raise their hands if they had a smartphone, like a BlackBerry at that time. This is 2000 uh-huh. probably. And really, you know, it was just emerging. And so only a couple people raised their hands. And he said, God, I thought you guys would be more advanced than that. Well, he goes, in a couple years, everyone's going to raise their hand when we ask if they have a BlackBerry or some comparable device. And he said, in 10 years, on that BlackBerry, you're going to be able to have all your genetic information, and you're going to be able to feed it through an application that will then tell you, should I go skiing today? Should mm-hmm. I eat Cheerios for breakfast? Based on, you know, probability, likely outcomes, the weather, your genes, your age, your weight. And I just remember, all these years later, it stuck with me. And then when things like personalized genetic testing became available, like through 23andMe and other services, and with the advent of the iPhone, I thought, oh my God, that dude was right. I hope he made something out of that.
Yeah, no, that's a great analogy. And even looking at the kind of the commercial wearables space of, yeah, now a lot of people are tracking it's low fidelity, but they're tracking their steps, and they're tracking, you know, if they want to, what they're eating, and people are actually starting to look at how they're sleeping, yeah. You know, tracking your sleep patterns, which is, you know, it's kind of a no brainer thing. But if you look at, I feel terrible this morning, let me see what happened last night. Now I'm sleeping terrible. Okay, well, why am I sleeping terribly? Is it, you know, trying to actually correct that action and trying to make yourself feel better from a simple space? So you can just imagine, you know, those are becoming ubiquitous now. Yeah, what's going to happen next on the genetic side, where that's just commonplace for you to, yeah, you know, do your gene sequencing and see what's going on.
Right, and ultimately, it helps to get to treat the root cause of a problem rather than a yeah. symptom, you know, which is what we're so stuck on and why the bodies break down.
Right.
I'll bring this up really quickly. This is interesting. On your website, on the Research Lab website, I thought this was cool. There was a link to an article, and you guys obviously do research outside of just developing these kinds of technologies. So I don't know if this is something you're involved with, but it said, new study sheds light on link between altitude and obesity. And I thought that was just really interesting, because when you think of the Air Force Research Lab, you might not think that that's the kind of stuff that they're doing. But obviously they are, and I thought that was just really useful, interesting information. I don't know if you know anything about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's critical about what, you know, what Air Force Research Labs can do, especially for the DOD. And this certainly isn't my area, but I know a little bit about, you know, kind of what the wing does. But, I mean, our men and women are, you know, they're up in the air. You know, a lot of them are, and some of them are doing, you know, our medevac guys are doing, you know, 8 to 10 to 12 hour missions in a C-17. You know, we've got flying hospitals that transport our wounded warriors from theater back to the States. And so, you know, they're up in the air for a very long amount of time. And what does that do to the human body? You know, for the nurses and the medics that are on the flight, what's it do to the human body for the injured men and women you know, does it make their injuries worse, or what does that do? So there's a whole science that goes into what happens at altitude. So yeah, we have to be very cognizant of that, because our, you know, our men and women are up in the air all the time.
Sure. And then I thought about that as related to athletic performance, because of course, and this is a completely, God, it sounds like a horrible analogy when you talk about saving lives in the air versus, you know, going to play in Denver, for instance, but it's something that we talk about here, in relation to, for instance, to fantasy or to football picks. You know, yeah. a team that usually performs at sea level is now traveling to a stadium in Denver. This is going to affect their performance. It's just common knowledge. And we've had trainers on talking about how you can't just train for a week in Colorado and think that, you know, you're going to do anything. You actually have to be exposed to high altitude for quite some time. And it seemed that this article, they pointed out that there was a correlation between lower body mass, or you were less likely to become obese even if you were in a fat state, if you were at altitude versus not.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's interesting. I know that I think it's one of the Steelers, maybe Ryan Clark. He can't play when they go out to Denver because he had severe I think something with his kidneys or something. He, you know, he had a severe health issues just from being at altitude. So, yeah, that's – and I, you know, especially our special ops guys, they can – you know, if they get a call to go somewhere that's anywhere in the world, you know, that could be at a much different altitude than where they were at. So how do they acclimatize to that, and how can they perform at their same level when they're, you know, 12 hours later at a much different place than they were at?
Exactly. That's the least of their worries, I feel like. They have so many variables. I couldn't believe it, man. That was one of the most interesting conversations I've ever had, was with those guys. Just knowing, I mean, obviously you're used to it, but for me and my co-host here, we just kind of were looking at each other the whole time, like, really? Are they really saying that they're doing these things? It's incredible.
No, that's, anytime I get in the room with those guys, that's exactly how I'm trying not to act like I'm starstruck, but yeah, I just absorb everything they say, and yeah, it's just amazing what they do.
Yeah, although their advice was very practical, I have to say. It wasn't like, you know, and I'm going to ask you this in a moment, but we always ask our guests to leave us with a couple of things from their personal arsenal, you know, just recommendations for how people can improve their health or their human performance relative to what their particular specialty is. And these guys didn't have anything like outlandish to say. They were really practical. They were like, eat clean. You know, if you go out and party, make sure you go to the gym the next morning. Just stuff that, like, no one really wants to hear. So I'm sure people are probably like, oh, come on. We thought you were going to give us some cool tool to use.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show that taking care of the body is actually pretty basic.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I guess with that, I'd end by asking you, since you have access to all this interesting technology, what would you recommend to folks listening who obviously can't go out and get access to a biosensor, but are there certain technologies that are available now that you think are useful, or just ways people can maximize their performance or monitor their own biomarkers?
Yeah, so I think I love the quote, what can be measured can be managed. And that's a lot of what you're doing, is just actually looking at that data and having that help drive your decisions of what you do. I mean, I think most people, you know, we have a scale at home that it gets very frustrating because, you know, it's hard to make those weight changes. But if you can have something that gives you more kind of up to the minute information of tracking and how am I doing and how is my performance increasing? And I just think the, you know, some of the basic tools that are out there, the wearables, it sheds so much light on what you're doing. And my, and this is actually what the, you know, a lot of these special ops guys and soldiers say is so important. Yet eat right, sleep right, and getting enough exercise. I mean, those are the three core things. And so a lot of these technologies can measure those three things, and it's being, you know, vigorous about, you know, actually documenting what you fuel yourself with, you know, what you eat and what you drink, and trying to be good about it, and then trying to get the right amount of activity a day, but then even understanding what's the best type of activity to get. I mean, you know, I had a time where I would run an hour a day, and I didn't see any performance gains, any, you know, I didn't feel like I was getting any healthier. And, you know, now I'm into CrossFit and high intensity stuff where now I'm actually seeing gains, and not say that that's a be all end all, but it works for me. And I even track my energy expenditure during my workout so I can motivate myself to work out harder. That actually makes me work out more. You know, if like on a Sunday, I'm going to take the day off, but I want to get more points, or I want to burn more for this week to beat last week. And just by the pure, you know, me measuring it is what gives me my motivation to beat that week before. And then I see gains, and then I get, it kind of snowballs, so it all gets better. So I think just, you know, measuring whatever you're comfortable measuring and trying to make, you know, good lifestyle changes to actually perform better, I think is a big thing.
I 100% agree with you. Whether people want to draw their blood 20 times a day or not.
Yeah. It's up to how, you know, how deeply you want to track things. And I think, you start small, but then when you say, oh, well now I can, I mean, just something as simple as cholesterol. I mean, that was kind of a no brainer for me. I saw my cholesterol panel and then I started CrossFit and I started eating differently. And then 3 months later, I saw a huge decrease in my numbers. I was like, oh man, this is really working. I'm going to work even harder to see how much further down I can get it. And so that's every 3 months. But yeah, if you do things like you're doing and track things every day, you know, you can really get some cool information out of that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's amazing. Like you said, you can't, you can't know what you don't know. So, yeah. I mean, once you start putting it on a sheet and you see the trends, you mentioned that with the biosensors, it was more looking at trends. That's where you start to understand, like there are correlative effects between certain actions that I take or certain things that I don't do. And that ultimately is what can heal us. So,
yeah, and I'm really interested in like, so you go to the gym to do whatever. So maybe you have in your mind, I'm going to do these three things, but what if you actually go to the gym with the mentality of I'm going to train against myself. I'm going to try to hit a certain lactate threshold or a certain anaerobic threshold. And I'm not done working out until I get to that personal biochemical goal. I think that could be cool. And that, you know, something we can enable with these devices.
Well, I am so excited and I wish I had one of those now.
Well, as soon as we have them ready and working, we'll get one to you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This has been absolutely enlightening and incredible. And thank you so much for the work that you're doing over there.
Oh, I appreciate it. I appreciate your time. It's been fun.
And I will give everybody the information on the website where they can actually find out more about what you guys are doing. And we'd love to have you back in the future when you're, you know, down the road developing new stuff.
Yeah, anytime. When we have something fun, we'll let you know.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, Dr. Hagen.
Thanks a lot.
Well, that was awesome. Thank you again so much to Dr. Hagen and to the folks over at the U.S. Air Force Research Lab who made that interview possible. Really, like I said, the nerd in me was totally stoked to talk to him, and he satisfied all of my inquiries. I really just, some of that stuff was just so mind-blowing. And kidding aside, it really is like the Star Trek Next Generation frontier of technology being developed. Just fascinating stuff. And I can't wait to have Dr. Hagen and maybe some more folks from his team back on in the future as they continue to develop new products and as this biosensor comes to market. Can't wait to get my hands on one of those. Man, the things that we could tell. And then I can stop puncturing my skin in search of my blood biomarkers. But yeah, it certainly does hold a lot of potential for pro athletics as well as just civilians, just regular folks like you and I. So really, really cool stuff. As always, you can check out the U.S. Air Force Research Lab online, and I'll read their website. We'll also post it with the accompanying article, blog post, that goes along with this podcast. And it's kind of a long website here, but it's www.wpafb.af.mil/AFRL. It's basically the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base official site, and then they have a sub-site there called the Air Force Research Lab, so AFRL. But if you just plug that into Google, I'm sure you can arrive at it much easier than trying to listen to all the letters that I just read out. You can also follow them on social media. They are on Facebook. They're on Twitter. They even have their own YouTube channel, so you can check out some really cool videos there. All the articles that I mentioned in the interview with Dr. Hagen are there, including the study on the link between altitude and obesity, an interview on the website with Dr. Hagen about the biosensor technology, stuff about microbes, stuff, achievement awards, just really, really cool stuff. They are on Twitter at @TeamAFRL. That's @Team_AFRL. So you can check out all that good stuff there. You can, of course, follow the Air Force on Twitter at U.S. Air Force and on Facebook as well. And, you know, remember, drop us a line at likeanathlete@cbsi.com with questions for future shows. We will feature them. You can also follow me on Twitter at Aaron Cerrone. Ask any questions. And please subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes Store. Give us a good rating. Give us a good review. We will love you forever. I can't promise that I'll send you any gifts, but I will send you virtual hugs and lots of good karma in return. So hopefully that's enough. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll catch you next time.